Joining me in the studio today is attorney Jim Cardia from the medical malpractice Baltimore law firm of Shakur, Federico, and Staton, which has been involved in over 1,000 medical malpractice cases. We have a very interesting program today and welcome all our listeners to 1-800-LAW-CALL. And again, it's my pleasure to welcome aboard attorney Jim Cardia. Jim, good evening.
Good evening, Frank. Nice to be here.
Well, let's begin, Jim, by hearing about this 46-year-old woman with a herniated disc in her back who had surgery to relieve the pressure. So I would imagine that all did not go too well, or we wouldn't be talking about this case to begin with.
You've always been very good in figuring these cases out, Frank. I'm impressed. Let's start with the proposition of a disc herniation. Your backbone or spine is made up of bones called vertebrae. And in between these bones are soft discs filled with a jelly-like substance. This is what is known as the discs. And these discs are cushion for the vertebrae and keep the vertebrae in place. When we talk about a herniated disc, we're talking about a disc that either slips out of place or ruptures. This particular patient did, in fact, have a disc herniation, as you mentioned, Frank, in her neck, which was causing her some symptomatology. After examination, her doctor recommended that she undergo something known as an anterior cervical discectomy. And that's a surgical procedure that's used to remove a herniated or degenerative disc, in this case, located in the neck area. And what happens with this type of surgery, Frank, is the surgeon approaches the spine from the front through the area of the throat. And after the disc is removed, the vertebrae above and below the disc space are then fused together. During the course of this surgery, the surgeon is obligated, pursuant to the standards of care, to identify, isolate, and protect all vital structures in and around the operative field, including, but of course not limited to, the spinal cord and the nerve roots involved. And it's important to note here, Frank, that prior to the operative procedure here, the patient's spinal cord as well as the nerve roots were intact. However, during the course of the procedure, the defendant violated or breached the standards of care by inflicting direct trauma to the spinal cord and created permanent damage. And unfortunately for this patient, subsequent testing revealed that she had suffered serious and permanent spinal cord injury. In fact, Frank, her damage is so severe that the patient is essentially wheelchair bound, has control or lack of a control of her bladder, and is forced to manually disimpact stool, all as a result of the neurologic damage which occurred during the surgery.
Well, what the as you said, the doctor failed to isolate, there's a three-step procedure to make sure that these kind of things are not going to happen. One is to isolate the area, right?
First is to identify.
Identify.
Second is to isolate, mm-hmm. And third is to protect. And obviously, you're operating in and around the spine, and it is important to identify and isolate and protect the vital structures around the operative field.
Like in almost in any surgery, I would imagine, right?
Correct. You want to avoid injuring the surrounding structures, and extra care, due care, needs to be taken to avoid injuring these structures. And unfortunately, that was not done here. And now you have a 46-year-old patient with permanent spinal cord injury.
Now, the surgery was open surgery, I guess, right? Or they went through the front, up by the throat?
Right, and that's where you come up with the anterior
right.
portion of the surgery. And you go through that area and remove the disc. And again, you're operating in and around the spine, and you've got to be very careful to avoid injuring surrounding structures.
So why wouldn't a doctor do these things that are imperative in any surgery, identify, isolate, and protect?
Well, that's why we're talking about the case.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm assuming this was not the first operation this doctor did. So why would a doctor be lapse in this particular surgery or any surgery for that matter where it becomes a standard of care more or less that you have to follow?
Right. Well, you know, the standard of care, as we've talked about many times on this program, Frank, is defined by what a reasonably competent or prudent doctor would do under the same or similar circumstances. And when a doctor fails to do something that a reasonably competent or prudent doctor would do under the same or similar circumstances, that is the definition of a breach of the standards of care. Breach of the standards of care is equivalent to medical negligence or medical malpractice, however you want to refer to it.
And you think this was a case of just being lax and not something that this doctor does all the time?
Yeah, I mean, this isn't something that happened every time that the doctor operated. There are certain procedures where mistakes happen, where there's carelessness or a lack of due diligence in protecting and identifying the surrounding structures. And on the few instances where that occurs, injury can result and malpractice can ensue.
So we have a wheelchair-bound person, 46 years old, that didn't necessarily have to be in this position. She could have probably, if the surgery went well, and the doctor did identify, isolate, and protect the vital organs, she would probably be a whole lot better off today than she's going to be now and in the future.
Right. The purpose of the surgery was to minimize or eliminate the symptomatology that she was having beforehand.
Sure.
But she was walking without any difficulty. She did have some symptoms. She did have some pain. The purpose of the procedure was to eliminate or minimize that pain. Instead, she comes out of the surgery wheelchair-bound, lack of control over her bladder, has to manually disimpact stool, all as a result of the spinal cord injury, which could and should have been avoided.